you got to understand that when you implement things or do some drastic changes in a practice, that there needs to be an expectation that not everybody's going to get on board.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the Millennial Dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. I'm excited about this one, although I feel like I say that a lot of times that I get excited about this one. But we have a first-time guest on the show, which is exciting. One of my team members, Jess, is joining us. Jess has been a long time treatment coordinator for us, hygienist for us. We'll talk about all that kind of stuff. We'll also talk about what we're doing as far as how we're dealing with our new patient consults and all that stuff. So it'll be a jam-packed episode of just some good stuff. Hey, remember, 2024, come learn to place implants, join the mastermind, come see us at 3D Dentist, www.3d-dentist.com. So yeah, if you haven't watched on YouTube, by the way, you need to come check it out, because now these are all video recorded, so you can see our faces. We get to talk. You can see my new studio, the behind the scenes. And so Jess, tell everyone who you are.
So I've been working here for almost 6 years, which sounds crazy. I started out as a hygienist here. And probably within the last year and a half, I transitioned from full-time hygiene to doing more treatment consultations and just full-time taking that role on.
Yeah, so that was a super, super quick synopsis version of that. So, okay, so you, Jess, you joined the team. When did you join us? 2018?
Yes, 2018.
And you had been out for like a year or so, and you had been doing corporate, right, if I remember?
Yes, I worked for Aspen Dental for a year.
Nice. How was that experience?
It was eye-opening for me coming straight out from school. I was working two hygiene chairs, and then also we had an overflow column where the new patients would come in. I would go in, I would perio chart, patient education, like all of that, while in the meantime I've got two chairs.
So you were basically running like assisted hygiene. There was someone else doing some of it. Or you were doing both?
No, I did both. So I would start an SRP, like with corporate dentistry, I was like, I would numb an SRP. I would go do the prophy.
Oh my gosh.
I would go to the SRP, polish the prophy, send the prophy home. And it was just like staggered.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane. All right. Well, anyways, we won't digress on that. But okay, so you come here and obviously the way at the time, you've kind of seen a lot of the changes because when you first got here, we were probably just starting. Had we even implemented photos yet in hygiene and some of that stuff?
No, it was just basic.
Really, we were kind of still a very bread and butter practice. We had just probably even started kind of like the 3D dentist way.
Yes.
A little bit. And then what was like the defining moment, I guess, where you like look back and you're like, wow, things changed. Or what, from a hygiene standpoint, you were like, I mean, obviously I'm assuming it was the photos when we came back and started doing that.
I would say we started just like the basic photos and just implementing that. We started just with like our normal recare patients, just trying to like tag one person a day that we would take pictures on. And
that's an area where I think people, they often create overwhelm is they try to bite off too much at one time. Like you can't take pictures on everybody.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a very foreign thing that we were being asked to do initially. And so if we were to have said like, we want pictures on every patient, I would have been like, holy crap, this is bizarre. Why would I take pictures on every patient?
Was it frustrating to you when you first started doing that? Like, did you buy in pretty quickly or?
I would say initially, no.
Yeah.
But I think that a lot of it too was just like the talk. Like throughout, like the hygiene team. And
I feel like initially when we brought a lot of that stuff back and started doing it, y'all felt like it was just a checklist.
Oh, it was a checklist. Because it was like, did you take a cone beam? Like, did you take their PAs? Because we started like taking more PAs. And then how frequently?
Yeah, just to be clear, at the time, I think we were only taking bite wings and like maybe perio charted.
Yeah.
It was, yay. But that's a lot of people. So what would be your advice, obviously? How do people get over that overwhelm? How do people, and I know I'm kind of reaching here for you to go way back in your thought process, because now life's totally different. But how do people avoid that overwhelm when they come back, or get people to buy in, like outside of just bullying their way through it or bulldogging it, which is what I did a little bit.
I feel like you did that, but I think it's also like if you have leadership, like to me, you were a leader in that time period, and well, you still are, but
I was probably a worse leader, I would think.
But like, I mean, initially I like didn't buy in because I just felt like it was a checklist, but I feel like it was a mindset shift once you actually started to notice change. Like people were starting to like react to the pictures that we were talking about, and we definitely got like pushback, but I do think that it is a mindset shift. So like you either do it or you don't.
You kind of either get on board or you don't.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened, right? At the time, how many hydrogens do we have here?
We had four.
And how many are still here?
One. Well, I mean, doing hygiene, none.
Yeah, doing hygiene, none of the people that were there are still there.
Melanie and I are the only ones.
And of the four, only two are still here in the building. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One is like, you got to understand that when you implement things or do some drastic changes in a practice, that there needs to be an expectation that not everybody's going to get on board. And that's a hard one to kind of pill to swallow when historically one of the things that we grade ourselves as owners is like, what's the tenure of my team? Like my dad used to brag about that all the time. He'd be like, well, I've had the same team for 15, 20 years. And I'm like, that's the problem. And change doesn't always mean people leave, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like you and Melanie are an example of people who your role has changed two or three times on some level since you've been here. Melanie's has changed, gosh, four or five times since she's been here.
I will say though, like it was another at bat whenever somebody would leave and then we would hire somebody else. Like it was an at bat for our team to be able to implement, like to start fresh with the new hygienist to like create their perspective and so that they could kind of follow along with what we were wanting to do.
Well, and what's kind of funny about that is we say the same thing with new patients, right? Like whenever you're implementing, you need new at bats because inevitably you're going to suck at it the first time. So I do think that over the past 8 years, we've on some level probably lost some good people just because that kind of growth and change requires new blood every now and then.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that necessarily all of the people that left were like bad coworkers from a coworker standpoint or even bad employees. I think that at the time, though, like they just weren't.
Yeah, they weren't ready for that kind of change.
Yeah.
All right. So part of like our big philosophy, obviously, is this concept of replacing yourself. And we talk about that a lot on the podcast, and you're a good example of someone who is that is like, okay, very quickly as you progressed in hygiene here, it became very apparent that you are essentially the lead treatment coordinator within the hygienist, right? Like you are able to diagnose and communicate and get case acceptance for the relatively speaking the most dentistry in hygiene. So, you know, we realized that as kind of we were growing, we needed more dedicated team members on the treatment coordinator side. Like we're just a big believer that when you move into comprehensive care, you've got to have a dedicated treatment coordinator. And at the time, Aubrey, I guess, was doing a lot of that.
Yeah, Aubrey was doing them.
And it became apparent that really we needed her to take on some more other roles as well, which kind of opened the door. So talk about kind of how that conversation went and just what that looked like and your hesitancies, because you were very hesitant at the beginning.
Very.
Just talk about that.
Well, I will say my hesitancy came from I was being fulfilled with the role as a hygienist because I felt like, I don't know how to say this, but I felt like kind of like above average. So like I was kind of getting,
you're killing it.
The praise a little bit, more than others, just because I did feel like I was doing a really good job in comparison. And so whenever I transitioned out of hygiene, I was afraid that I wouldn't necessarily get that praise or I wouldn't be above average. And I also, I felt like as a hygienist, I was considered a leader And then this was kind of like a nuance of what Aubrey was doing.
Yeah, because you were the team. You were, at this point, you were our team lead hygienist.
Yes.
Because we had five hygienists at this point.
And I wanted that. Like, I wanted people to look at me for help. And I wanted people to look at me as, like, someone who knew what she was doing and somebody to look up to. And
right.
So I was afraid as I was transitioning outside of hygiene that those people wouldn't look at me the same.
Right.
So that's kind of where my hesitance was.
And then, so walk through the process of kind of how I talked you off the ledge to slowly get you there.
Well, I'm a very big numbers person. So I felt like my numbers were like really good as a hygiene treatment coordinator whenever I was presenting treatment and stuff. And so he was kind of like, can you imagine it times 10? If this is like the only thing that you're doing, like those numbers are still going to be there. They're just going to be multiplied.
Right. And when I remember having a conversation about how I was like, okay, what is it about hygiene that you like? Right. Or, mm-hmm. or because, and that's, I think, an important question you have to ask employees is like, what do they enjoy about their job? Or like, because hygiene is one of those where I firmly believe like either people go to hygiene because they're like passionate about oral health.
No, that was not me. I was like, definitely passionate about like
you
people
were,
person, like
paycheck.
Yeah. Paycheck. Yeah.
More money in hygiene than the other jobs.
Yes.
Like, yeah. So once I knew, okay, Jess isn't driven by anaerobic bacteria and reducing gingival inflammation, mm-hmm. that it was more the connection with the people, seeing them move forward and the financial upside that hygiene brought. I was like, okay, this can be a good motive. This can be something that can work.
Yeah. And I do feel like, I mean, I had to slowly make that transition because I know now I'm like full time, but I wasn't always full time treatment.
Yeah. So walk through that process. Cause that is important. It's like one, financially I couldn't afford it at the time to just take a hygienist and pay a hygienist hygiene pay.
Correct.
Cause that's the other question was I kept paying. We were like, hey, you're going to keep making what you're making as a hygienist. And if not even have a better upside here than staying. So how did you go from being a full time hygienist to now the handpiece is done?
I started out.
Do you even have a hygiene license still? Can you maintain that? Good. That's good.
I do. So I started out just in case you fire me.
The treatment coordinator market's probably not as strong for hygiene pay.
No. So I started out just doing hygiene Mondays and Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I just had one day of consults.
So you had 3 days hygiene and one day of consults. Okay.
Yeah. And then I slowly stepped away from hygiene because I started to realize that my patients that I was seeing for consults were calling back like ready to schedule or had questions in regards to treatment during my hygiene appointments. And I was like, why am I compromising like a $40,000 case for like a $50 pro fee? And so that was a hard transition for me. I didn't realize it until months in because I was still just pushing through.
But that's like an eye-opening thing. I mean, you got to think, you all listening, there are patients who are calling back to get treatment scheduled, or there's patients that you talk about dentistry that aren't being followed up with, and you've got team members doing other jobs that from a potential business import standpoint pale in comparison to what that would be doing. So I remember having those conversations being like, look, I'm like, how quickly can I
How
can I get another day? How do I get another day?
Yeah.
One, because we were wanting to turn up the marketing, wanting to bring in more consults.
Yeah.
And two, I realized that by you doing, every time you were doing hygiene was an opportunity, you couldn't be following up with patients. You couldn't be scheduling patients.
It was definitely like my workflow for consults were compromised when I was doing hygiene. The other part is just the expectation. Like, I feel like to some extent, like Aubrey had consults, but like she was also doing sleep consults. And so I feel like I had to prioritize like my follow-ups and stuff like that differently because of my hygiene schedule.
Right.
Which was hard.
Yeah. So then I get 2 days, right? I think you drove into 2 days. And then
I literally did one day a week with hygiene.
And then you did one day a week for a while.
Yeah.
The one day you kind of held on and you're like, I got to keep this day. Because it's important that I.
Well, then it just got frustrating for me, honestly.
At first you wanted it because you were like, I want to maintain one day of hygiene. So I just feel connected to the hygiene group. And this was also the part where you struggle with, a big part of, I think, the struggle was you were going to give up that leadership role. Cause I was like, hey, Jess, if you're no longer like, you're not the hygiene lead anymore. Realistically, you're doing one day a week hygiene. Yeah. And I think that was the part too, that was a struggle for you.
Well, and I think that I was doing the hygienist a disservice because I wasn't available. And I also wasn't in the mindset to like, or the headspace to help them whenever I was doing consults.
You're like, no offense, but I can't come help you take photos because I'm trying to close $50,000 cases.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was, so then I feel like it was though good for somebody else to kind of fill into that role because leadership was needed.
And I think that's probably one of the coolest parts about it to me. Like, and I hope you look at it back and see, because obviously like you're continuing to be amazing. But what I think one of the coolest things is, it's one thing to be able to like go level up and go on to something else. It's another thing to like leave what you built and kind of help create in the hands of someone else and like continue to see it flourish and blossom and even be better in some regard.
Yeah. I will say it's a really cool thing to watch, like from an outside perspective now that I'm like no longer in hygiene or like doing anything with them as a leader. But it's been cool to see Sydney like flourish in that role because now I see from the outside, like they do come to her
absolutely.
For a lot of things that I really wasn't available for during that time period that I was transitioning out of hygiene.
Yeah. What would be your advice to someone who like is getting that kind of like call or tug to go beyond a role that like has historically given them security and safety and like taking that leap to like trust the process?
I would say that it is okay for you to slow play it unless your doctor says otherwise.
No, I think that's good advice though. Like it's okay to say, hey,
like, I, to some extent, had to get to that part. Like, I wasn't ready for that initially. I didn't know what my expectations were going to be. I don't know what my day-to-day life was going to be like. Am I going to take it home with me? Like, what is that going to do, and how is it going to change my perspective on work? And because of that, I was scared to, like, just completely let go of the fact that I went to school for hygiene for 4 years. So it's okay to slow play it if you're not mentally prepared. Cause I do feel like it's a role that like you need to be fully committed to.
Well, and I think honestly, I think what the doctors need to hear in this is that it's not that your team members are unwilling to do things. It's just that you got to know that is the appropriate way to do it. Like people hang out or come see our office and then they'll see, oh, you've got this dedicated person. You got this person doing this. You'll have this much marketing plan, this. And it's like, yeah, that's not how it started. Right. Like, that's not how we got here. Like we got here by taking kind of a stair-step approach, leveraging and managing the risk versus the upside. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, not going all in on something until we knew it was,
like,
it was
going like to work. I feel like I made that decision for myself to be like 110%. Like I want to do treatment consultations, but up until that point, like I had to mentally get to that point.
Right. Okay. Let's switch gears a little bit. So now that you're a full-time treatment coordinator, I think what's important to distinguish here is that we have two treatment coordinators now that are dedicated, essentially. Did you really ever do planning appointments, or did you really just morph into, were you the only treatment coordinator? Or we morphed into two kind of as?
I feel like we definitely separated the two. Like whenever I was like, because I feel like Aubrey did both initially, and then we started separating them as we got the new building.
Okay. So she kind of waned off.
Which is when I transitioned.
So the reason I say this is because I think that it kind of happened. I think the way to probably initially do it is that as you get to become a dedicated treatment coordinator, they have dedicated time. And I want to caveat this. When we say dedicated treatment coordinator, what we mean is they can have other roles. Yeah. They need to have dedicated time to do stuff. So like, Jess was a dedicated treatment coordinator on the one day that she did it when you started, then you were a dedicated hygienist the other days. So correct. I think it's important. It's not like you have to hire a full-time employee to fully jump into something. Yeah. It just means that you need to have partition time out that you're dedicated to that time at the time that you're doing it. So, and so then as we grow, we realized we really had two sectors of the business. And this naturally happens as you grow. I think when you're a two doctor practice, you're easily getting away with one dedicated treatment coordinator. I think as you move to a three doctor practice, you still can get away with one.
Yeah.
And then as you kind of, as you start to do marketing,
yeah,
to bring in patients, that's when you have to look at a dedicated team for.
Yeah. Like I remember our schedules were blocked for like a consult for an hour and a half and then like two planning appointments back to back. Like that was still like one solid person like committing to that for the day. But our blocks were not like staggered the way that they currently are. They started out with one person, one like schedule.
One person, one column that was handling all the either planning appointments where people come back from our kind of like as new patient consult from our existing from the practice.
Yes.
Or someone coming in dedicated for treatment. And then and now we've morphed into essentially because of the marketing spend and what we're trying to bring in from a direct to consumer market, we have a whole dedicated column that Jess runs. Yeah. And then another dedicated column that our other treatment coordinator Mirena runs that has more planning appointments. Limiteds that become consultations, kind of the consultations that come from within the practice.
Correct. Yes.
So talk a little bit about the hurdles we had initially when we tried to build a direct to consumer practice. Cause I think this, and this is and I'd like to have you and Carly on at some point, but I want to touch base on it here is what does it look like being a dedicated treatment coordinator for a business where none of the patients come from within the practice, really. Like all of your patients are coming from, they never come through hygiene, really.
Like in comparison?
Just what is that? What does the day in and day out look like? What's the setup? What are the hurdles? What are the surprises?
Yeah.
Like what's unique to it?
I would say some of the hurdles is that people don't know anything about our practice. Like prior to, like unless they've had like a family or friend that have like raved about us, whatever it is, and have sent them our way. But I do feel like people coming in from external marketing have done some research on us, but don't know things from a personal standpoint. So I feel like we have to create rapport that like they can trust us and like we're there for them, like through whatever they're experiencing, dental related, life related, whatever. And I feel like Carly has to make that connection on the phone. So that whenever they get to me, like I can expand on it a little bit, but we don't have to go in, like we can just start from like the dental experience.
Yeah. And so Carly is she's our dedicated basically lead generation person. So Carly hands all the inbound and outbound consults as it relates to our, this part of the business that's direct to consumer. And then Jess basically handles them once you get into the practice, kind of managing those people from when they step foot in the door to when they do or don't do treatment. So how do you, one of the things I think is unique is that what we see is one, a lot more open time.
Yeah.
A lot more cancellations. Mm-hmm. And what should people expect when they start doing direct to consumer marketing from what does that look like on?
Well, you have to build your systems during the process. Like, I feel like initially we didn't have those systems in place. Like,
give me an example of the system because I agree with you on this.
Well, like Carly, for instance, like she now has a system of like how frequently she's calling people. As soon as somebody calls, like she reaches out to them, or as soon as they fill out something online, she follows up with them. And so before that, we didn't have that system. Like Carly wasn't even, like that wasn't her role.
Right.
And so now that we have somebody dedicated to like our external marketing, like that is her system. And then whenever it comes to like my system, I feel like I had to create like the Excel spreadsheet so that we can determine like where our marketing is coming from. And
yeah, let's pull up your Excel spreadsheet here. Oh. Because that's great. Let's see if I can pull that up. Okay. So talk to me about why, when you say this was important, what came from the, like what was part of this Excel spreadsheet that you were like, I got to have this from a standpoint of like, cause some people are going to already listening to this, so that you need to talk them through it. But what were some of the things you wanted to track?
I wanted to track where they were coming from. So what external marketing source did they hear about us from? I wanted to track the no-shows.
Yep.
So that we have a system in place for when they do no show, like we have a column of patients that we can reach out to see if they want to reschedule, or, you know, even 6 months later, if they canceled in May, we can follow up now and just be like, is now a better time for you to come in for a consultation? So I can kind of categorize that and reach out to those patients.
All right. So on the spreadsheet, so if you haven't seen this, it's worth going to YouTube to check it out.
And then also, tracking purposes for my, my follow-ups.
So you would track, okay, who the patient was, what the treatment was they needed, how much was presented, did they accept it? And then you also are tracking who the doctor was that would be doing it versus who the doctor was presenting it.
Yep.
So that you can kind of track that stuff. So then what I'm seeing here is you can also track, you know, you're looking at the presenters, like all the doctors, and seeing, okay, who presents the most.
Like what case acceptance is for the presenting doctor.
Yep.
And then also for those doctors that did present stuff and it closed, who was it distributed to?
Which is important. That's kind of like the assisting. So like,
yes.
How can I help feed my associates through the dentistry that comes in that maybe I don't want
to
do?
We try to keep it as fair as possible based on like their menus as an associate dentist.
Yeah, being what they offer from their standpoint. And then we also look down here and see, we can see from a case acceptance standpoint by like our referrals. So like this year we presented $4 million in dentistry to progressive patients. That's a marketing. $1.5 million to commercials. And then of the $1.5 million to commercials, $850,000 have closed, which is a 60% conversion rate. So like we can now see, hey, that's a strong lead.
Yeah.
A strong source of referrals. So maybe you want to implement more
commercials and
we want to spend more money there because our spend's good. And then we track our spend and what our ROI is. What's interesting is the ROI actually is our conversion's lower with kind of your funnel lead, which is progressive, DIM, those type, but it's very comparable on an ROI standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just interesting how this data works. Now, the other part I look at, and this is kind of where Carly, this is interesting where she tracks, but on our full arch specifically, is just the percentages of which people make it through the sales funnel. And so we only connect with 67% of the people that reach out to us, which is not our fault. We have a dedicated person to it, but that just tells you how difficult it is to get these people back on the phone to have a conversation. Of the 67% that we get a hold with, we're only booking 9%. I mean, that's crazy. I'd like to see that number higher. You know that I would like to see that number, but that's an area where we obviously can improve on. Mm-hmm. But of the 9%, 50% don't show. And of the 50% that don't show, or the 50% that do show, we only close about 42% of those people.
Which is still a really high.
That's a high, rate. A pretty close rate when you look at what we're presenting, the level of the quantity of dollar amount we're presenting. So. Yeah. But my point in this is if those numbers sound crazy to you, like I don't want to play in a game, well, then you have no business playing in this game.
Correct.
Because that's the part that's tough here is that the reality is that when you start to do funnel marketing where you're doing lead generation with forms, ads, landing page stuff, and then you're having to make outbound phone calls to get hold of these people, the reality is that by the time you funnel this down, you're going to have less than 5% case acceptance.
But also no-shows are realistic. Like it happens.
Yes. I mean,
people call one day, they're super interested and either something happens or, you know, they decided not to come in, whatever that might be. But I think finding and prioritizing things outside of just consults, it would be good for whoever that person is. Like I prioritize my follow-ups, helping train like the rest of the team members.
Yeah. When I think of the things like, okay, you look at what I do think you've done a good job from a standpoint of like, hey, the reality is 50% of your schedule falls apart.
Correct.
Every day.
Yep.
So how do you, if I'm going to pay someone well to do that, what are you going to do with your time? And so I think that's where, one of the roles you help with not only the practice, but me personally is the social media aspect because, which I think aligns really well with this because naturally you're dealing with before and afters, you know, these patients, you know, who the big cases are. Like that's a good ROI of your time spent on making sure that we're continuing to internally market to our patients with the before and afters, that our social media represents the type of dentistry that we want to do more of. And then the other thing obviously is you're looking at that tracker and you're following up with leads.
Well, and look at my, do you want to pull up my VIP? Yeah. So those are all of our cases, and how I start date, when it was started, when it's completed. So I kind of know, I go through the schedule every day and add onto this, like specifically what it was that we did. And I'm not doing like the onesie twosie stuff, but like any cosmetic cases. So I can be like, did we take after photos on this patient? Like, have they been posted to our social media yet? Do they need a collage that needs to be made? Like, we had a sweet delivery, video on them. So I'd love to make a reel. So there's definitely ways that I feel like sometimes.
I love it. Reel, sweet delivery.
Yeah.
Would they get their stuff?
I do feel like sometimes that's like one pushback that you get in some of the 3D courses, is that like, what do I do in my spare time?
Right.
Cause people don't want to pay for somebody to have like six consults, but then only two of them show up, which is understandable.
Yeah. But the flip side of that, so we've kind of we've talked about how like shitty it can be, but here's the upside. How much dentistry have you closed this year?
$4.1 million.
So would you like to have a dedicated person that can do 4.1 million knowing that 50% of the time is going to be a waste or potentially a waste, like that potentially could be nothing, could be on their schedule?
Yeah.
Because like the reality is it works. Mm-hmm. It just works in a different model and mindset than traditionally what we're used to.
Yeah. Well, and I don't feel like anybody's micromanaging me. Like, what
part
did
of
you
that's
do
because
there?
You're a self-starter a little bit. I mean, you know, there's other people that like in our office that, and that you work closely with on some level that don't have that same mentality. So I do think it's important that who you have in this position needs to buy in, understand the vision, understand that like, and what I want to point out is of that 4.1 million, how much is closed not the same day?
Oh, I would say a lot of it doesn't close the same day.
So like half?
Yeah, if not more.
Like maybe more than half of the dentistry doesn't close the same day. So like that's why that downtime where there are cancellations is so important, because when else would you be connecting with these people and getting them to say yes?
Yeah, and it's good too. Like, I'm not saying cancellations are good, but when a patient does come back and I'm available, I think that's a huge thing for me, because if not, I'm in a consult. And like, I have to call them back, and it's not a good time for them whenever I do call them back. And so we're just playing phone tag when all they want to tell me is that they want to
be
available.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I need to be available. And if it's not me, then it has to be somebody else that can handle that phone call. And it's just not ideal.
Correct.
I mean, we go through so many logistics and like personal things that like we talk through and like these follow-up calls, that it would be hard for somebody to just randomly step in and try to jump into those
things. Well, I'm unbelievably proud of you, Jess. I think you've done an amazing job. It's been fun to kind of, we basically kind of just, you know, troubleshooted our way through this and tried to kind of like figure it out and make it work. And I think we've had an incredible year. I think next year will be even better. I really do. You know, taking the risk, you know, betting on team members is a scary thing to do. You know, and there's always the saying, it's like, what if I invest in somebody and then they leave? And then the follow-up question is always, what if you don't invest in them and they stay? And neither is a good situation. And so I think what you got to do is you got to help coach people, teach them, give them pathways to be successful. And you got to understand that success comes with a level of risk. And I think a key component that I would recognize is that we didn't go overnight from, hey, Jess was a hygienist to a dedicated person. That was a stair-stepped approach that happened literally a day at a time. And slowly but surely, as that happened, the other things we were doing is we were starting to increase marketing spend, right? To try to increase driving patients, trying to have availability. It all goes back to what we talk about at 3D Dentists, which is the four fundamentals. You got to be able to diagnose the dentistry you want to do, which means sometimes you got to bring in more of those patients. You have to have a good, effective way to communicate in a way that can get people to want to do the dentistry with you. You've got to have ways for people to pay for it. I can't stress this again. Over 35% of our collections in 2023 was financed. 35%. You've got to have a healthy number of financing, because if not, that means you're underperforming. And last but not least, you have to have availability. I mean, essentially, Jess has now, you know, four days a week of availability, where she can see patients, because we got to get them in when they want to get in. And then you've got to have availability to do these cases at the doctor, because it's not uncommon. We'll close a case on a Monday and we'll do the dentistry on a Tuesday or Wednesday. So it really is just the fundamentals that continue to get scaled. And so I hope you enjoy this episode. And thank you again, Jess.
Welcome.
For joining.
That was good.
Now go call some more consults. Or go see some more consults so we can get people in. All right. Work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.